KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church in Portland. Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories will be performed by Melissa Bangs, who studied with the Upright Citizens Brigade. This is her one-woman comedy show about postpartum psychosis and healing through shared moments, laughter, and tears. Again, that's Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Coonerin's Electric Fin Band, Thursday, August 10th at 8 p.m. at the White Owl Social Club in Portland. Coonerin's Electric Fin Band and 1939 Ensemble perform Thai Psychedelia and are part of the Pickathon-sponsored White Owl Social Club's Outdoor Summer Concert Series. Again, that's the Coonerin's Electric Fin Band and 1939 Ensemble on Thursday, August 10th at 8 p.m. at White Owl Social Club, 1305 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock a.m. Coming up next, it's Pacific Underground. And I am privileged, honored, as well as contractually obligated to remind you that this program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Beloved, the open-air sacred art and music festival happening Friday, August 11th to Monday the 14th, now celebrating 10 years, located at an Oregon coastal forest venue about 1 hour west of Corvallis. Beloved Festival weaves together a weekend-long musical story, plus workshops, yoga, craft and food vendors, and camping. Tickets and info at belovedfestival.com. And now, as promised, it's time for Pacific Underground.
Good morning. You're listening to Pacific Underground here on KBOO Portland. I'm one of your hosts this morning, Jenna, and I'm joined with the lovely Tabitha. Say good morning, Tabitha.
Good morning.
Today we will be talking to Jacob Huertos of Direct Action Alliance. And it's going to be another conversation where we're talking about sustainable activism and, like, what is that? Is that just like a made-up concept that is not sustainable within itself? We'll talk a little bit about that.
Y'all hear a great interview with Deepay Wu last week?
Like, that was good stuff. That was Kanan's interview. If you haven't heard it, you can go onto our socials. We have it on our iTunes and our SoundCloud. And let's talk a little bit about the cleanup. Apparently, we have two iTunes accounts, Pacific Underground.
We do.
So if you go into iTunes and you search for Pacific Underground, you'll find two different accounts with the exact same audio.
Does that make us doubly awesome?
Yes.
It makes us doubly awesome.
Administratively confused and irresponsible. No, it makes us doubly awesome. We give you
double rainbow all across the sky.
Double audio. So, if you feel like having twice as much audio on your phone, subscribe to us on iTunes twice at Pacific Underground. You can hear that interview with Deepay Wu. So good. And so we're going to have a similar interview today. We're going to be talking to an activist about, like, how did they get into this and all that sort of stuff.
Continuing the conversation.
That's right. Oh, yeah. And if you're just tuning in Pacific Underground for the first time, we don't really have a tagline yet. We're calling our show the show where Asian and Pacific Islanders talk about Asian Pacific Islander stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't even talk about that stuff. We just talk about
issues pertaining to the Asian and Pacific Islander or American and Asian American Pacific Islander experience.
Exactly. Or sometimes it's just like, hey, we're Asians and Pacific Islanders talking about popcorn, so therefore it's an Asian Pacific Islander issue. It's just, you know, we have fun here. But we also have serious stuff, like talking about what are we going to be doing with America?
America.
I know how to handle.
I am so tired of winning. Trump promised me I would be tired of winning, and frankly, I am sick of tired of winning.
Well,
now,
let's talk about someone who is helping us with the winning.
Sweet.
Our guest in studio here with us is Jacob Hueros. Thank you very much for joining us today, Jacob.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
He's like cracking up, trying to like be a polite guest, and we're like, he knows about the winning. He knows about the winning. And so if you're a regular listener to our show, we have teased this interview, but unfortunately, poor Jacob had a car break-in last time he was scheduled to be here, so he couldn't come in because it's Portland.
I apologize for not making it.
No, Portland. Okay. Portland needs to apologize to you.
My car got broken into about three years ago. I understand those feels.
Oh, man. Actually, Portland came out really, really good from after this happened. One of the members of our community, they did a little fundraiser, and it was an incredible outpouring of support. Got the funds that I needed to keep going, and I don't know.
Yay.
It was wonderful, actually. Nice. It was an experience I'm not used to. You know, you don't really get that community experience over here in the States where you're like, hey, I'm gonna be good because all my neighbors got me, and it happened, and it was really cool.
That's awesome.
Oh, that is really cool.
I mean, that's just something kind of like about Portland, like that I find really interesting. It's like, okay, so I've been like following this guy who had his bicycle stolen while he was doing a cross country trip, whatever, and his bike got stolen here in Portland. And it was like this bad thing happened to him where his bike was stolen, but then there was like this huge fundraiser for him because Portland was also like, no.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Stop being Portland and stop stealing bicycles. So it's like a weird thing where like everyone gets their stuff stolen, but we also have like a culture where everyone's like, I'm so sorry your stuff got stolen.
Yeah.
I get it. It's like, dude, let's just all stop stealing each other's stuff.
Yeah.
But enough about us. Let's talk. This song is very interesting.
Well, were some of the people that showed up to help you out, were they associated with Direct Action Alliance? Or
oh yeah, wait, here, let's do a little intro so we can like talk about what that's all about. So Jacob is he's involved in an organizer with the group Direct Action Alliance, and so let's talk a little bit. Actually, first, can we talk about Direct Action Alliance
absolutely.
What is Direct Action Alliance?
So basically, Direct Action Alliance is an organization that formed after the election of Donald Trump. prior to that, we were doing I was doing political work. I worked for Commissioner Ken Humberston out in Clackamas County during the election. I worked for Dave McTeague prior to that when he was running in the primaries against Kurt Schrader, who, as far as I'm concerned, is a garbage congressman. But I was doing that, and then as we all know, the Orange Ferret King got elected, and there's all the cool thing about Portland is there's no shortage of dedicated activists. There's no shortage of organizations that are willing to step up and fight back. But what was going on, the reason why we formed is because there were all these minorities, but it felt like the vast majority of people were still very complacent. And during that time, after Donald Trump's election, a lot of people weren't complacent. A lot of people were angry. A lot of people were coming out and kind of capitalizing off of the knowledge that I had up until that point of the way kind of things function is you can't get people to keep coming back over and over again. You got to take advantage of that one time when they're going to be there and kind of use that to spread it, you know. I was talking to a good friend of mine, Calico Castile, and he was telling me about how we can transfer over these things that you learn, you know, from businesses and stuff to other things like activism. So there's I think it's called Restaurant Rescue or something, where there's this theory, you know, after the first visit, someone's like 40% more likely to come back, and then it goes up a little bit in the next visit, and by the third visit, they're dedicated.
So, loyal customer.
Yeah. So kind of the reason that we formed was to take advantage of the fact that so many people were coming out, and we need to get these people to come back.
While the iron's hot.
Yes, exactly. And not everyone's going to keep coming out to events. Not everyone's going to keep being dedicated to these things because they have things going on in their own lives.
You can't have the Women's March every weekend.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, the biggest thing, I mean, the whole point to activism is to make change, long-lasting change. And the best way to do that, you got to capitalize off of what you have with the resources that you have. And the way that we looked at it is we need to target community. We need to make sure that while the people are out here, while they are listening, we need to convince them to plug into their community. You know, get to know the houseless person on your block. Get to know the needs of your neighborhood. Get involved in your neighborhood association. You know, we can't ask you to come out to Portland every single day, but I can ask you to just check up on your, you know, if you drive by the lady every single day who lives right there, why not check up on her every day? You know, kind of just little things like that, asking people to do little things. And once people start getting to know people, once they start doing these things, it's not hard for them to get sucked in. Once you start caring about someone, it's not hard for you to keep caring or to start caring more about more people. And that's kind of the target that we wanted to focus in on, and that's why we formed. And it was me and a buddy from college and a buddy from high school, two buddies from high school, and then this awesome friend that I met at Bernie PDXK, and my partner at the time, Jamie, and we all kind of came together and started making plans. And our first big action was on December 4th, which had to do with Standing Rock back then. We were going to actually occupy, it was a joint venture with a Seventh Generation Environmental Alliance and Phil Killery, and we were going to occupy the park and Holiday Park in front of the
Army Lloyd
Corps
Center.
Of Engineer building. Yeah, luckily, it's a mixed bag. But at the time, luckily, they denied the final easement, and we didn't have to camp out, and it was awesome. And then, you know, we moved on from there, event after event. We focused in on U.S. Bank a lot. We did the big inauguration day protest, and the focus for all of those things was asking people to do the small things. You know, it wasn't, hey, we're doing this huge event again next Friday. Let's get at it. You know, it was asking people, hey, stand up when you see something wrong. Just, you know, we're not asking you to come out and do the things you're not able to do. We're asking you to do what you are capable of doing. Like when you hear something wrong, when you see something wrong in your neighborhood, in your normal life, do something about it, because you've got this massive community that will back you up, and you're not alone. So don't feel like you need to be silent. And that was kind of the thing, you know, we need to have resistance everywhere. be vocal about your opinions. Be vocal about the fact that when you see something going on that isn't right, be vocal about the fact that it isn't right. You're not, you know, you don't necessarily need to complain or get angry, but talk about it. Begin a dialogue. Start doing the actions that you can do to make it, to rectify it, or however that may be.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of what you guys are doing is about like sustainability culture when it comes to activism. I cringe sometimes with that word activism, because it sounds like something that is almost kind of temporary, because I mean, like, none of us can really be active in any one thing in life like 24 hours a day. So to me it sort of sounds like, yeah, we like go into the street and then you protest and then it's done, versus like activists like to use the word the work, right? Doing the work, while the work is actually something that is very long. You don't think you're actually going to, you know, stop Donald Trump with one protest. You know that the work is long and that it's about generations of people and blah, 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 and so forth. So I really like this concept that you guys are going with it's like emphasizing the local, like on a very micro level. Just because I feel like it's hard sometimes for people when they're first getting into addressing social justice issues, how to humanize it for themselves. Like you were saying, like houselessness and stuff. Like most people I know like would like to solve that issue here in the city, but how much have they actually humanized it for themselves? Yeah. Like they're like, oh, I feel bad. I see the camp over there. But like, I'm like, well, have you talk to the person who you're saying like that's right down your street, and like humanize that for yourself, and then help that like person, because you probably can't help an entire camp of people, but can you help that one person?
Yes.
Well, I feel like with the election of Donald Trump, I was really disheartened when I heard that 56% of white women voted for him. I was like, what? But I feel like a lot of the people that have voted for Donald Trump, it's like, well, this affects other people. It doesn't affect me. It affects those people. Mm-hmm. And it's some concept of some far distant removed person that's a criminal, or Donald Trump's going to take care of those people, when you realize, oh no, this affects me and my community and the people I know. I think it's great to focus on your community. And I enjoyed hearing you talk about how Direct Action Alliance focuses on like neighbors and community, because I don't even really know the neighbors on my block. I feel really bad about that.
I think you're kind of your average American in that way.
Yeah, no, it was really bizarre. When I moved here when I was from the Philippines back in 2001, the number one culture shock thing for me was the lack of culture and community here. Like, I mean, when I first moved here, I moved to Fresno, California, and there was a heavy Latinx community down there, and I didn't feel as isolated. I didn't feel as lonely. They talked to me. I was still learning English, you know, so I started speaking, like, you know, I was still integrating, and those were the folks that I integrated in with, because they were the ones who were kind of, you know, who kind of resembled what I was used to, and who were generally accepting. And then when I moved up here to Portland, Milwaukee, it was just like,
No one talked to you.
There's no neighbor. Like, there was literally, it was my first friend neighbor was Stephanie, who lived right next door. And we ended up having a little thing. Like, she was 15, I was 15, and we went to the same high school and all this. And she was like my first friend who kind of, you know, who I actually developed like this neighborly relationship with. And then K-Boy, who lived across the way, who was from Hawaii, and he was my friend. And it was just like, there's these sparse areas where, you know, there's an Asian here, there's a Black family over here, there's a Latino family over here, and you guys kind of just like see each other. Yeah.
And you see each other across the way.
And you kind of recognize this lack of connection and contact between neighbors. And the cool thing about Portland, like back then too, is that people tried. I don't see it as much anymore, but that back then people would, you know, I had this crazy neighbor for a while, and she actually was like not bad crazy, but like just off the chain. It's like, da 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 da. She was awesome. She brought the community together because she talked to everyone in the community. Mm-hmm. So everyone knew Julie. So Julie was your common connection. And it kind of lacks. People are scared of their neighbors, and they're scared of the, I don't want to get emotional. You don't need to be. Just be friendly.
It is the thing about Portland. Like, I thought that was really strange when I first moved here. I'm one of those Californians moved here like 5 years ago.
I know.
It's okay. I swear. I'm trying. I'm trying really hard to.
Well, as a native Oregonian, I can judge.
You can look at me with all sorts of judgy. Like, how come you're not passive aggressive enough? But that point is just, you know, I moved here and everybody was really nice. Like, they were in that like Pacific Northwest passive aggressive, I'm smiling at you sort of way. But nobody was very neighborly, and I was just sort of shocked by this. I mean, I haven't come from like Southern California. It's not a very neighborly like place either, but people were either like nice to you and they were your neighbor, or they like just ignored you, and like that was that. And then I went here and I was like, everybody was so nice, but I don't, like getting to know your neighbor is really surprisingly difficult here. And the like lack of culture, like Portland definitely has its own culture, but there's a lack of it. I can imagine, especially like, if you like come from another country.
Yeah. I definitely feel like or Portlanders at least are very distant.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, oh, by the way, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Pacific Underground. We're talking to Jacob Reros right now from Direct Action Alliance, and we're just talking about sustainable activism.
And getting to know your neighbors.
Getting to know your neighbors, yeah. And just what is that here in Portland? Because like, so as you were just talking about, you know, when it comes to activism, when it comes to addressing these kind of, issues that minority communities have, that so much of it about is just reaching out mm-hmm. to people within your community. But I also wonder, does that also feel some like, I've often wondered about that in myself as someone who organizes and saying like, is that too slow?
Yeah.
Like, is that too small of thinking, or does it trickle out somehow? You know, what is your sort of feeling as someone who's like watching this and encouraging people to do this?
I think, well, I mean, personally, I think it's the only way to go. There's the way that I see what is happening right now is it's kind of like this problem where you've got all of this going on and people keep trying to deal with the symptoms of this disease. You know, we're here in Portland specifically, it's like a microcosm. So we've got the houselessness issue, we've got the housing crisis, we've got the fact that East County is neglected. You know, we've got all of these problems. We've got the fact that our Latinx community, in spite of us being a sanctuary city, still have to live in fear because mm-hmm. raids still happen. Non-actionable actions where they say this isn't going to happen, but they're not going to do anything to prevent it. They're just not going to participate. It's standing by, it's being complacent. Mm-hmm. And that is what our government is doing right now. And so you see all of these symptoms of a disease. And so you're trying to deal with the houselessness issue. You're trying to deal with keeping people fed. You're trying to, and the bottom line is the city is run wrong. The reason that all of these things exist, the reason it's not changing, is because we do not have a representative government. We've got city council members that are elected citywide, mm-hmm. a bunch of white people, most of whom live on the west side.
Yeah.
They can't relate. It's not a sustainable model for this city. We need to transition to a municipal government where the government is representative of the different towns, the different areas. It's literally, if we could focus in on changing the constitution of our city to make it so that our government is actually representative of the neighborhood, so that the people who are making these decisions actually have to go home and be accountable to their neighbors and be accountable to their community on the decisions that they made. And, you know, it's so hard the way the system is right now to hold anyone accountable. So we can keep dealing with the symptoms of these issues, we have to, because there are people suffering. But at the same time, we need to recognize that this isn't the issue. This is a symptom of the issue, and we need to focus our energy. And there's this, I have a friend who's actually working on this right now. She's put a bunch of time and dedication into this, and she's starting a book club that I'm going to be a part of, just kind of exploring this idea of municipal government and how to do that. And she's put a lot of work into it, and hopefully we can make some progress on that front. And then another thing is food justice. There's this huge issue where this whole system was set up where you literally have to purchase your food prepackaged from these farms. You know, it's not sustainable. And the mm-hmm. only way to change all of this isn't to keep dealing only with the symptoms. Yes, we have to address the what the symptoms are doing to our community, but we need to focus in on the problem. The problem is that we have a government that is not representative of the people, both nationally and locally. Mm-hmm. And that is something that you need to address. And the only way to address that, the only way to address food justice, the only way to address any of this is to go out and to physically, we can't have rallies where we get people going, we can't afford the radio ads, we can't run a political campaign. What we need is for everyone who cares about this to go talk to 10 people, 10 neighbors. And you don't need to go out there and convince them, or if they don't agree with you, you know, tell them that they're wrong. All you need to do is go start talking about it, create that dialogue, make people start caring, ask them the questions that are going to make them think and start caring. That is the only way, in my opinion. Yeah, it does take a longer time, but it is going to be more effective than anything else that you can possibly do is... You know, you have to address the disease itself, which is the fact that our government does not represent us. You know, even Chloe, bless her heart, she's wonderful.
Chloe Udaly on the city council. Yeah.
I mean, even her, she's still part of this thing where she doesn't know what the family over on Northeast, you know, Alberta and 32nd is feeling, you know, as opposed to whoever, you know, whoever
that's
lives
where,
on
close to where I live.
Yeah, you know, opposed to someone who lives like say on 122nd and Foster. You know, they've got different issues in their mm-hmm. communities, different things that they need to deal with. She doesn't have the capacity to be able to represent both those people at the same time. No one does, because you don't know both those people. You don't live in both those neighborhoods. We need people from the different neighborhoods to represent their own neighborhood, to let the council or the assembly know, hey, this is what my neighborhood is dealing with. And then all of them collectively make a decision on what is going to be done to deal with it. And that's literally the only way, in my opinion, that we can actually fix this city, is if we change our government so that this city, the people who run the city, represent the people. I mean, Ted Wheeler and Mike Marshman are practically twins. And it's ridiculous. We are run completely 110% by white people in this city.
Yeah.
So how the heck am I supposed to feel represented? I thank God we have organizations like Don't Shoot Portland that is out there every single freaking day putting in the work, actually confronting these leaders and holding them accountable. You know, our organization, we don't have the capacity for that. They do some amazing work in keeping the city accountable. And oh gosh, who am I trying to think of? I'm trying to think of someone else too, but I can't think of him right now. But he works at a school, I think, over here on Benson, and they put in so much work, and it's really sad that they're doing all the heavy lifting, literally, so that the city can look at their idea and be like, oh, well, that looks like a good idea, and then implement it. And these people who did all the hard work, while city council just kind of sits around and does, you know, that's not the way it should be. I hate seeing these dedicated activists literally just run themselves to the bone, working their butts off to try to make things right, and then city council's just like, yeah, okay, or no. You know,
it's something that it amazes me about Portland. I've lived in other cities and worked with other city like councils and such, and it's just like, this city is, to me, it's America. It's like the perfect example of America, where there's this, you know, white cultural hegemony that people are blind to. Like, I feel like I'm making huge generalizations about like the white community here, but I'm just like, how do you all not see it?
And I wouldn't necessarily, it's just the white community, because I'm not nearly as engaged or up to snuff on what's happening at City Hall, but you're right, it feels really distant, and I don't really feel like those representatives represent me. And so in a way, it's kind of laziness. Why get involved in? Same with like Ron Wyden. As much as I love hearing when he says good stuff in the Senate, but at the same time, I feel really distant from Ron Wyden.
Yeah. No, he's definitely an establishmentarian.
Okay, real quick, we needed to go back to one comment you made about Marshman and Wheeler like looking like twins. I am convinced that they come from this like Ken doll like factory of like, well, Portland needs a new leader. Let's like churn one out, like one of those Play-Doh hand crank machines, and you just like take your white Play-Doh and like, like, who's the new Felicia? Because if it's even, I would like to hope that like we are going to have some kind of change there. But at the same time, I'm just like, oh, well, if they don't pick him, they're just going to like put somebody else out. Because I was convinced that Hales and Wheeler were the same guy, but just Hales got like really beaten down by being himself. And so like they were like, oh, well, let's just like inject him with some new life and let's call him Tone Wheeler. And it's just
bring
like
him back.
I know. Man. And I just wonder, like, do the white people around Portland see that? Are they like,
have they ever
gosh.
Been seen in the same room together?
This is what's confusing, is when they are seen together, that's when you realize how twinsies they are. You're just like, matches.
My goodness.
It was really shocking. Like, I had always heard Martian's name, but I didn't see a picture of him for a while. And then when I saw him, I was like,
is that Ted Wheeler?
They're totally like awkward cousins.
And they they seem to agree on everything, right? They
just like share a brain.
Yeah, they back each other up 100.
Yeah.
And
neither a puppet show where you got like Wheeler on the right hand, Martian on the left, and you just got one person doing the same
pandas.
Voice. Oh my gosh,
pandas.
We need to follow up, by the way, what happened with Mikado Panda time.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck was that? But let's take a quick break. You're listening to Pacific Underground. We're talking to Jacob Weros today of Direct Action Alliance. But we got a great song that I love, because I'm a fan of Run River North. They were just here in Portland last week, and they have a song called 29, so we can all reminisce on the time when we were 29. If you're not 29 yet, enjoy the fact that you're not 29 yet. Enjoy that youth.
You have a lot to look forward to.
Oh, gosh. There's all sorts of things. And that next year at 30. So revel in the 29. So let's have a listen to Run River North with this came out in 2016 on their last album.
That was a cool song.
It was sort of like we just made you feel stressed out with our idea that there's just some twinsy factory pushing out Wheelers and Marshmans.
And now I'm going to listen to the soothing, calm API band.
Yes, that was Run River North. And you're listening to Pacific Underground here on KBOO. And we are speaking with Jacob Weros, activist, organizer with Direct Action Alliance. And before the song, you know, we were talking about what is Portland? I think that's what KBOO is.
Twin mayor and police chief.
I know. And then it's like, then when you look at city council too, you're like, how did Chloe Udaly get there? Because the rest of them all look the same.
I can't wait for Nick Fish to go.
Oh my God, we could have a whole other show. That's called I Can't Wait for Nick Fish to Go.
Well, I guess you can enlighten me. As I admitted, I have this local government disengagement. But who is Nick Fish?
Well, I don't blame you. The government is set up to help people be disengaged and not really care. But Nick Fish is this... this person who sits on our city council, who he basically represents the rich business side of Portland very well.
He does progressive, quote unquote, progressive things every once in a while.
How long has he been on the council?
Too long.
Way too long.
Okay.
And you know, his chief of staff, Portland's Resistance, actually put out something on this. If you go down Greg McKelvey's thing, like maybe like 3 months back, he's got this whole thing on this dude's chief of staff. He's a really, I don't want to say bad, I don't know the dude, but he does not represent the people. He doesn't have our interests in mind. He's cold. You can see him in city council. If you go to city council and you listen to people pour their hearts out about these issues, and he doesn't care. And like, it's just, he does not belong on the Portland City Council. Well, none of those people who are on there
they're all politician-y.
And that's the thing, though, is that if we do want to transition to a municipal government that is representative of the people, we first have to take back government. But it's that huge conundrum where you can't, you know, once people get into power, it's very seldom that they still stick to what they stood for before they get into power. But I mean, how do you change the system from without revolution? How do you change the system from within without being corrupted? And it's this thing that we're still working really hard to figure out, because not everyone is ready or you know, able for revolution, but not everyone is able to go in and still be steadfast in what they stand for. We've got a few people who have been. I mean, shout out to Jeff Merkley, solid dude. But yeah, like I said, we need people in government who are good people. We need the good people. It doesn't matter if you don't know anything about politics. That might be an ups thing for you. You know, if you've got kids, if you're involved in your school, run for school board. Like, you know, just we need good people who aren't out there to make money, who aren't out there to gain power, people who genuinely care about the community. We need you to run for office, to give people an option. You might not necessarily win this time around, but we need to have that option. We need people to start getting engaged. We need to knock on doors and talk about these issues. It's so important.
Well, let's talk about people who are engaged, specifically you, Jacob. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about just a little bit less about Direct Action Alliance and just about you yourself as an organizer, as an activist? I don't know, what do you like to, do you put a label to yourself? Like when people say, like, what do you do?
I'm a dad.
Your dad.
I'm a dad. Yeah, that's my first primary function in life. I mean, the second I saw my firstborn kid, I was like, I'm a dad now. Everything else just kind of goes away.
New job title.
Exactly.
Well, so I'm wondering, does that being dad, does that help sustain your work?
Absolutely. I mean, it drives everything, honestly. Like when we talked earlier on, or yesterday when we were speaking about, you know, what drives you in all of this, and how do you not get frustrated and fed? And I, you know, like I said, this is all I want to do. I can't imagine doing a job where my goal is to make more money so I can get this next house, so I can go on this next vacation, so I can buy this better car. I can't imagine that anymore. Like, I see all the perils that are happening in this world. I see how badly it's been screwed up. I look back at the generations before us, the millennials.
Gen Xers, yeah, and the Gen baby Xers, boomers.
The baby boomers. And the people who were in charge back then, they really screwed everything up. And there are these, you know, there's certain, these baby boomers who have been fighting for decades, right? And they know the ins and outs. They know everything about this stuff. They're the ones who we need to be talking to and engaging. And it sucks because a lot of them are kind of fed up at this point and kind of distant. And they still care and they still don't, but they don't come out as much. They don't get involved. And a lot of them physically can't. But us as younger people, it's our responsibility to really reach out to these people who walked in these shoes before us and figure out
the 60s.
Yeah, figure out what they did wrong, what they did right, and learn from them. Like, I think there's this huge disconnect here in the States between the youth and their elders. Like, we like to blame the baby boomers for everything bad been happening. And it was that generation's fault. They are the ones who let it happen. But we can't disregard the fact that we McGovern, like, we had millions of champions, millions of baby boomers. Dave McTeague is one. Tom Civiletti, like Connie Lee Harrigan, all these people that I know from out in Clackamas, just these folks that care, and they've been fighting for mm-hmm. decades. And there's so much knowledge that you can gain from these folks. And then people within the political system, like John DeHaas, like, I mean, when I was working with Ken Humberston, the knowledge that I gained from them is like, I can't ever replace that. So, I think that learning from your elders is so important. And the number one thing that I've learned from my elders is don't waste your time with your kids ever. Like, that is your gold. And mm-hmm. I took that to heart. So everything that I do, like, if it's not going to make a better future for my kids, if it's not something that is for them in terms of making the world a better place, I don't really want to spend my time doing it. As far as work is concerned, as far as, you know, my energy is concerned, I don't want to do something that is going to further detriment their future. I want them to have the best possible future, and the only thing I can think of doing is making a better society for them to grow up in. So,
like, how did you start to get involved with addressing social issues? Was this something that, I don't know, was something when you moved to Portland, or was this something that started when you were back in the Philippines?
Yeah, my father's Filipino. He grew up on the side of the ocean, one of those poor kids. I mean, his mom died when he was 12, giving birth to his youngest brother. He raised his four brothers and his sister on his own until he was 24, when his youngest brother was able to go to school and then, or start high school. And then he went back to high school and graduated from
high school. Oh, at 24?
Yeah, graduated from high school at 28, went to the city to find work, and he's always been driven. And this missionary, Ray Carlson, found him on the side of the road and offered him school in exchange for being, you know, for taking care of him and his wife. Basically, they ran this seminary, and they needed someone to, you know, basically be their house person. Like, I don't want to say house servant, because they were wonderful people. They weren't at all bad people. But that was my dad's job. He cooked for them. He cleaned for them. And in return, they sent him to school and gave him enough money to take care of his family and send his brothers and sisters to school. And it was the Carlsons that really helped my dad, you know, get to where he needed to go. And so my mom moved to the Philippines in the late 70s to be a secretary for these missionaries while they were here in the States. And while she was over there, she started taking in kids. She had a bunch of kids. By the time the missionaries got back, they built her an orphanage, and they asked for a social worker from the government, which World Vision provided. My father was with World Vision, and they ended up connecting and Aww. Getting married. But my whole life, I mean, I grew up in an orphanage in the Philippines with 150 brothers and sisters.
Aww.
And my dad and my mom are just, they're the most incredible people you could ever meet. My dad, just growing up, I can't explain it. Like, he would stop and pick people up on the side of the road. Every time it rained, he literally made a point of going out to the hospital and visiting sick people. He was a genuinely good person. And the main thing he taught me was, be kind to people. It doesn't matter if you agree with them or not. It doesn't matter if they're the good guys or not. Always be kind. And I mean, we would have the NPA, the communist rebels, come through there. And my dad would take care of it. The children's home was like this area where you couldn't fight back when the war was going on up north. Mm. So there would be these gun battles. One of my first memories is someone getting shot and us having to rush him to the hospital. Mm. This gun battle right down below. But the children's home was this safe zone. It's where the communist rebels could come through and get taken care of. And then the military who was chasing them, the battalion, would come through, get taken care of.
Oh.
And it was just, I grew up in this family where my mom and my dad, just by example and in their words, just, I mean, it was completely heavily religiously. I mean, there was a big religious pull on it too, unfortunately, but still, in general, it was like the real, you know, the real what Christianity, I guess, is supposed to be, where you give up what you have and follow the example of just taking care of your neighbors. Whatever you do for the least of these, you do for me. And that's what they were doing, was, you know, for the, I've since then, not, and I'm not Christian anymore, but that foundation that they built of just, your primary concern needs to be your neighbor, needs to be taking care of the people around you. And so I grew up with it, and I just, it's in me. I can't really, I never like decided one day I want to do this. It's just kind of evolved. I've done what I needed to do and made the choices that I've made based off of, like, I want to do things to help people. And you know, I've taken advantage of the opportunities that life's thrown my way in order to help people more. But it's not like a selfless thing. It's literally a selfish thing. Like, this is what I want to do. It's not me like, oh, I'm giving up all of this to, you know, I'm not giving up anything. This is what I've wanted to do my whole life, is do what I can to help the community. So I love it. That's how I got into it, basically, was in politics first, Barack Obama's campaign, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And funny thing, don't tell anyone, but we're on the radio. In 2004, the first person that I volunteered and worked for was George W. Bush.
What?
Swear to you.
How did you get there?
When I moved here from the Philippines, like I said, I was still very religious. I didn't know anything about politics. I thought I was a Republican. I came here, there was a Republican running. I wanted to help my community. I wanted to be part of, you know, I wanted to do things. And I got a handwritten letter from George Bush thanking me for my contributions as a 15-year-old.
Oh my God, you still have the letter?
Yeah, no.
I would have kept it.
I lost it. Not intentionally, I lost it. But no, yeah, I've always wanted to be involved.
Oh my God, if I got that letter, I would still have it to this day. I'd just be like, I can't believe I got this.
Yeah,
oh.
I lost it. It was sad.
Wow. But I mean, that's the very, like, I don't want to say like typical, but a lot of like immigrants or like mm-hmm. people when they first move to the States are Republicans. Mm-hmm. And like,
I was a Republican for years in my voter registry.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. I'm learning so much today.
Because my parents vote Republican, they voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah. So I was kind of curious, as someone who's now like on the very far left now, comparatively. Yeah. Was that because of like more cultural like alignment with where the politics you were coming from, or
it was education? Pretty much, I think it was under, because the Philippines is completely different than the U.S. You can't equate the two whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like with Duterte and the government that we have over there, mm-hmm. you cannot mm-hmm. equate the two. Like Duterte is like this cross between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. He was supposed to be this hero for the indigenous people, which unfortunately, he's not turning out to be so typical politician. Yeah. He does have these socialist tendencies.
Yeah, I heard about the summary execution.
Yeah, and so he's got like this Donald Trump side, but he's also telling the poor people to take back the land from the oligarchy, you know? So it's like, you can't equate the two governments. It's really hard to understand. And so when I came here, I was a Republican because I knew the Republican I knew about was Abraham Lincoln, you know? And like, this was the party that, you know, I agreed with their stuff, and then, you know, less taxes, less government. And I was all like, yeah, this is wonderful. And then, like, as you get educated, you realize that, hey, there's, you know, you Howard Zinn was a huge influencing mm-hmm. factor. My ex-partner Jamie was a huge influencing factor. My buddy Calico Castile, huge influencing factor. So there's these people in your life who you care about and who you get to know who introduce you to certain things, and you know, you respect their opinions, and you start opening yourself up and you start educating yourself and you start learning these things. And that's kind of how the transition, when I went from being a Republican to realizing I wasn't a Republican, maybe I'm a libertarian. Whoop, whoop, absolutely not a libertarian. You know, maybe I'm a Democrat. And then you realize, whoa, the Democrats, that's not me either. Yeah. And then you're like, maybe Green Party. And then you end up at this place where you're like, wow, I'm an ANCOM, like, you know, or else like I'm an anarcho-socialist. Yeah. Like, this is, you just get to this point where you finally.
Your favorite band is Chumbawamba.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. Yeah. Oh man. No, so yeah, there's this education factor. And actually, that being said, a big thing that we're focusing on right now, the members of Direct Action Alliance, we started this thing called, this organization called World Smart. You should check it out, beworldsmart.org. But what it is an educational platform online with all kinds of resources from kids, from preschool all the way up through college, that provides these educational resources and platforms, like things from Khan Academy and different areas of the internet, where people can log on and have a free educational database from the Philippines. I inherited some land from my father in the Philippines it's right near Oslob, which is the second most, it's basically one of the biggest whale shark breeding grounds on the entire planet. And there's crazy tourism going on there, but not the right kind of tourism.
Oh.
So I was planning to do like an ecotourist place, you know, where we do things right, but Instead, what we're doing is it's going to be world smart. We're going to build a library, the first free access library, the only free access library on the southern tip of the island of Cebu. Oh. We're going to focus in on training kids, bringing them up through the program. The resort is going to exist specifically to sustain the library and the services we provide and the scholarship that we're going to end up establishing to send these kids to school. And it's going to be this resort where people can come and be involved in the community, not just an eco resort, not just a tourist resort, but a resort where you can come for cheap and say you're from Switzerland, right? And in Switzerland you make chocolate. Let's be stereotypical. So, you know, say a Swiss chocolatier is over there and he wants to spend his afternoons in the library teaching children about Switzerland, or telling them about chocolate or whatever, you know. You can do that and stay for super cheap at the spot, you know. We also want to create a partnership with different schools because of the diverse marine biology in the area. It's one of the best places for people to have access to a diverse amount of sea life. And so we want to make partnerships with universities so that they can send students there to kind of have, you know, field experience. It's still all in the works, but that's a huge thing that we've been focusing on lately, because while you need to deal with your community first and foremost, I mean, half of my community is in the Philippines and I just inherited this land, and Portland is such a huge, it's got a huge heart. Regardless of all the issues, it's got a huge heart, and I want to take this side of my life and integrate it with that side of my life. And my ex-partner Jamie actually put in a bunch of work into World Smart and basically built this up, and we're going to be transitioning a lot into focusing on getting that educational platform set up and getting World Smart going so that we can have a dual outreach kind of. And so we're really excited about that. So that's something to look forward to.
That's you're pretty like, cool. You're not busy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm hearing so many themes. By the way, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Pacific Underground here on KBOO. We're talking to Jacob Weros of Direct Action Alliance, and we're talking about activism, organizing, and sustainability, culture, and not the eco sense, but how do you sustain activism and addressing social justice issues and just all that sort of stuff. And what I'm hearing a lot in kind of a theme of how you approach the work we talked about the sustainability culture is it's very grounded in compassion. And even though, as you're saying, you know, you're no longer like a Christian, but that you kind of carried that. And what you're talking about is like, you know, talking to individuals and where you're talking about even just setting, you know, this system up where people aren't just going to consume tourism, that they're actually going with like a compassion for like themselves and for others of like, hey, I have something to share. They have something to share. Yes. Let's just not like consume off of one another.
Yeah, exactly. It's that whole idea of community, of sharing community. So come over, let me learn about your culture, learn about our culture, and we conquer this issue. You know, the disease is the fact that we don't know each other, that we're not a family. So we conquer that on a community level. You know, there's all these symptoms that you can deal with, or you can, you know, if someone, and a big thing I want to throw out, don't be mean to people who disagree with you, like especially people who are fringe. You know, if they're Nazi or fascist, screw them. But you know, people who don't really understand, explain things to them, because 9 times out of 10 they don't really know, they don't understand it yet, because they haven't heard the right questions. They haven't, you know. So if you take someone over here who's scared of immigrants and you bring them to the Philippines to live on the beach for 2 weeks and get to know the children and get to hear their dreams about coming to America to work to make a life better for their family, and they finally put a face on these people that they've been so hostile against, and they realize, hey, this isn't the problem, and they open up to new things. And I think that's a huge part of it, is the lack of connection. And that's going to be a huge part of World Smart, why we want to keep it low cost, why it's all going to be focused on educational things, is because we want people who wouldn't normally do this to be able to afford to do this. And then we want them to get to know the community and get to know the people where they are. And we're going to teach the community how to make their own soap and how to weave their own baskets, you know, and all this stuff. And that's what we're going to use at the place. And we're going to sell it, and it'll be a livelihood for them. And the people who are going to teach them these different things that they're going to be learning are the tourists who are going to be coming through, who have their own skills who they can share, you know, just this community of sharing, where you share your culture, you learn ours. This is how we solve the issues in the world. It's through education about each other and through the World Smart website, where you can educate yourself in anthropology, basically, like get to know the human condition, why we are the way we are, get to know that a Black person and an Asian person and a white person are all separated by just like the tiniest little gene, you know, like we're
gene
all
difference.
Yeah, like, you know, you cure the issues through anthropology, basically, through education. Yeah. You teach people that we're all the same. We all have the same dreams. We all have the same goals. We all want the same things for our family, you know, and it's just, we think those things are different. Over here in the States, people think that it's money that's going to get them all those things they want for their happy family. In the Philippines, they think it's getting to America that's going to get them these things for their happy family. You know, it's, but in the end, all it is happiness. It's people want the best for their family. So we need to create a society that actually gives the best. And then we need to get to know each other and realize that, hey, we all just want this exact same, and helped me out.
Yay. Before we get to the end of our hour here, I want to make sure that people who are interested in learning more about Direct Action Alliance, how can they find out more and learn more about what you're setting up in the Philippines there?
Yeah, so for Direct Action Alliance and actions in your community, as well as, you know, different, basically go to Facebook. Direct Action Alliance is the name of our organization. And for World Smart, you can go to beworldsmart.org. You can also look us up on Facebook. World Smart is basically facebook.com/worldsmart. And or you can contact me, Jacob Barreros, friend me on Facebook or whatever. I'd love to tell you more about it. And yeah, we want just get involved. My one thing I want to say to everyone, just next person you see on your block, houseless person, whatever, just actually talk to them, get to know them, get to know your community.
Yeah, you're proposing something super radical there. Oh my gosh, get to know the people who live near you.
Maybe I'll actually cross the street today and go talk to my neighbors across the
street. America great again.
That's the only way to make America great.
Yeah, because we never were the again, so
I'll
we're getting there.
I'll just go to my neighbors and say winning.
Winning.
Yeah, exactly. Totally winning. So, you've been listening to Pacific Underground here on KBOO. Coming up next at 10 o'clock, it's Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And then at 11, a Radio Geekly recounts the recent Portland Zine Symposium. Ooh. Nice, because we've talked to Zine Symposium people ourselves. I'm exploring independent publishing and DIY culture, so stay tuned for all that stuff. If you want to check us out, Pacific Underground, we are on the socials at PAC Underground, or you can always check out our KBOO page at kboo.fm and search for Pacific Underground, and you can find all of our archived audio. Remember, you can go on to iTunes and look at our...
Check out our two iTunes profiles.
iTunes accounts. We will clean these things up because we're super professional like that. Yeah, and so tune in. Our next show is... I'm looking on the phone right now.
I want to say 25.
August 25th at 11 a.m. is our
From 11
next,
to noon.
Yeah, and we're going to be continuing, you know,
this conversation about API issues,
sustainable activism, and I'm going to keep
identity.
Using that word until other activists are like, stop it.
And maybe we'll do a follow-up on the Mikado.
Oh my gosh.
With puppets.
I hope we never do a follow-up on the Mikado because it just stops being done. We can go along forever. But just a big thank you to our guest today, Jacob Barreros of Direct Action Alliance. We hope to have you on our show again
sometime.
Yeah,
thanks for being here.
No worries. I'd love to come back on again. I had a blast. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Stay tuned for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott at 10. We'll be right back.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Business of Diversity on August 7th at 11 a.m. at the Sentinel Hotel in Portland. The Business of Diversity will be a conversation about the impact of diversity on the economy and business in Oregon. This panel discussion features business owners, educators, and community leaders. Again, that's the Business of Diversity on August 7th at 11 a.m. at the Sentinel Hotel, 614 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Books and Records! Books and Records! Come on down to KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th, noon to 6 p.m. at Cider Riot. There will be fabulous books, DVDs, CDs, and vinyl at ridiculously low prices. It's a fun community event that benefits your favorite community radio station, KBOO. Again, that's KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th from noon to 6 at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. In just a couple of seconds, it will be 10 a.m. And there it is. Coming up, Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. That's going to take us up to 11 a.m. when a Radio Geekly recounts the recent Portland Zine Symposium exploring independent publishing and DIY culture. And KBOO keeps you informed and involved and needs your help to continue to do so. Go to kboo.fm/give and make that hard left turn from passive listener into active member. That's right. That's how we keep it going. That's how you remain a fully informed, well-rounded citizen of your community. All that and more coming up on your community.